We will hear argument next in number 131637, In Re Dinsmore. Mr. Lopez, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court. The issue in this case is whether an error committed during prosecution in order to render some claims allowable, where that error, the moment that it was entered, renders the patent, the resulting patent, unenforceable, is correctable by reissue if that which had been dedicated to the public is maintained dedicated to the public and any protection that was given to the public is also preserved.
If we were to think that an error has to be a false understanding at the time a decision is made, what evidence establishes what that false understanding was in this case?
In this case, an associate made an incorrect assumption that the application and another patent were commonly owned. That assumption was incorrect, the assumption was not corrected, and the associate proceeded to file an incorrect terminal disclaimer that the moment it was entered rendered any resulting application unenforceable.
Well, it's not really unenforceable, is it? I mean, if the common ownership were reacquired, reestablished, then it would be fully enforceable within the limits of the terminal disclaimer, correct?
There is.
I mean, it may be a practical difficulty, but it doesn't render the patent void in that sense, right?
It is not void, Your Honor. It's not void, but it's unenforceable.
Well, unenforceable and also, under the current circumstances.
Well, Your Honor, there is no precedent for correcting a terminal disclaimer.
No, but you could certainly correct the circumstance that the two patents are not commonly owned. And if you did, I guess this patent would be enforceable, right?
You know, there's no precedent for that in the sense that if they were not commonly owned at the time that you entered that terminal disclaimer, correcting the terminal disclaimer at a later date by making them commonly owned, there is no precedent for the fact that that would be making the patent enforceable.
Really? Oh, I mean...
At least one case where a district court has not allowed the correction of a terminal disclaimer at a later date. So there is...
Let me ask you this question. Suppose that you have... two potential inventors. One inventor has invented nine of the claims, but the other possible inventor might have invented a tenth claim. And so you decide, let's toss Jim in there as an inventor because he did a little work on the patent and he was largely responsible for one of the claims. And then the patent issues with the two inventors, and sure enough, Jim, the second inventor who's responsible for only one claim, decides he has no interest in enforcing the patent. He's not going to go along with any lawsuit. So the patent becomes effectively unenforceable, does it not? Now, suppose you come in and you say, and reissue, we want to change the inventorship by dropping off Jim's claim. Would that be something you could do under the reissue statute? would that the error of naming Jim because you didn't understand that Jim would start would be balking at enforcement of the patent? Would that be an error correctable under the reissue statute?
Your Honor, we can easily differentiate that from the present situation. In that case, it was a correct naming of an inventor.
Well, but it was a bad strategic judgment. It was a mistake in the sense that had they known what Jim's intentions were, they would never have added that claim.
Your Honor, we differentiate between a deliberate decision and a totally incorrect statement.
Well, this was a deliberate decision. I mean, nobody thought they had the wrong form, right? I mean, it's deliberately entered a terminal disclaimer. The only question is, was it a bad decision?
Your Honor, we differentiate that the Board of Appeals made this akin to a contract. As a contract, this is basically a contract with antecedent impossibility. In the modern language, that's called common mistake. But it's a mistake. It's an error. It is not, it will be unthinkable that an attorney would render a patent unenforceable in a deliberate action.
Just assume I agree with you that there was a mistake here that renders the patent inoperative or invalid within the meaning of the statute. What I'm struggling with is the rest of the statute. I don't know if you have 251 in front of you, but it says by reason of a defective specification or drawing, or by reason of the patentee claiming more or less than he had a right to claim a patent. So it seems like there's two bases for getting a reissue. And it doesn't sound like this is a mistake in the specification or drawing. So how is this claiming more or less than you had a right to claim?
Because inventing this incorrect terminal disclaimer, you were given four claims. You had no right to those four claims. So the patentee was claiming more than he had a right to claim.
I'm sorry, as I understand the regulation, putting aside other questions about anticipation, he did actually have a right to those claims because he filed a terminal disclaimer that was completely valid under the regulation. The regulation does not require that there be common ownership to file a terminal disclaimer. It requires only that the terminal disclaimer say that the patent will be enforceable only at times that there is common ownership. He filed that. That complied with the regulation as I understood it, and he got his four claims, assuming he needed a terminal disclaimer for it.
Those four claims were obtained by an error, a totally rendering the patent totally unenforceable unless the patent is given away. That would be the correction, would be to give the, which also doesn't go to the intent of the statute.
Is there an operative reissue declaration, any of the proposed ones, including, I guess, most importantly, the last of them, I assume each one superseded the others, that declares in straightforward terms, I believed at the time, falsely as it turned out, that there was common ownership? I don't remember seeing such a declaration about Mr. Dinsmore's belief about ownership at the time.
Your Honor, I don't believe that is in the reissue declaration. The reissue declaration says that the terminal disclaimer was incorrect, and really it would go down from Mr. Dinsmore to Mr. Dinsmore's agent or attorney. But it says that it was an incorrect terminal disclaimer.
Did the patent issue because of the terminal disclaimer, or did it issue because you amended the claims? It's confusing to me what actually happened here.
There are about four claims that rely on the terminal disclaimer.
No. I understand that. But the examiner issued a rejection on kind of more specific grounds and then also talked about the double patenting problem. In response, you amended the claims and added the terminal disclaimer. When the examiner accepted the things, did he rely on the fact of the amendment or the terminal disclaimer or both? And can you point that to me in a decision? Because I am confused.
It is not in the decision, but it's both, because the claims are amended to overcome a 102 rejection, sir, remember. And the terminal disclaimer, the incorrect terminal disclaimer, was submitted for the obviousness of double patenting rejection.
Is there a specific point in the examiner's decision that I can read that tells me that?
In the reason for allowability, the examiner doesn't say exactly that, but it says that some claims were allowed because of the obviousness of double patenting being overcome by the incorrect terminal disclaimer.
Does it make any difference to your case if the reason the claims were allowed was because of the amendment and didn't have anything to do with the terminal disclaimer?
No, in the sense that it is the incorrect terminal disclaimer that is the problem. And to correct this would require that.
But going back to the statute,
you give the patent away.
Going back to the statute, if the reason you got the patent was because of the amendment, then didn't you get exactly the I'm sorry, I lost my place, but you got precisely the amount you had a right to claim in the patent if it was because of the amendment.
Those four claims were allowed because of the, and the examiner says so in the notice of allowability. Those four claims were allowed because of the terminal disclaimer. The
well, that's what I'm asking. Where is that?
That's in the record. That will be the notice of allowability, which I haven't. A595, following to A599.
Right. So at 599, the examiner notes in under a heading called Terminal Disclaimer in paragraph 2. The terminal disclaimer that we talked about last time has been submitted, and then goes on to talk about allowable subject matter, and that discussion includes all of the four claims that were subject to the terminal disclaimer. That's why at least I remained uncertain whether a terminal disclaimer actually was necessary in this case, to whatever extent that matters to the 250 issue.
By that first statement, the examiner is stating that the terminal disclaimer was necessary to remove the obviousness of all patenting rejection. If you would look at the arguments in the replies. The amendments were used for the 102 rejection.
You are into your rebuttal time, Mr. Lopez.
Just one quick question. To make sure I understand what your legal position is with respect to what constitutes an error in the context of a terminal disclaimer. Suppose you have a perfectly valid set of claims, and the prosecuting attorney comes in and enters a terminal disclaimer, which should never have been, it was not necessary, didn't need to be, but, you know, want to give part of the patent back to the public, so be it. And then later you come back and you want to get rid of the terminal disclaimer because it wasn't required. Is that an error that could be corrected under reissue?
Your Honor, the answer to that is no. Because you have to, once you give something to the public.
I mean, it was a terrible mistake.
Your Honor, but if you have given it to the public, you cannot take it away.
Okay.
But that is not a terminal disclaimer that ties, that renders the patent unenforceable.
Well, it renders it unenforceable for the...
For the time, but not term. Not right. Not for forever. And this is... We okay. Go back to the intent of the statute.
Okay, I don't want to take any more of your time, but you've answered my question. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll restore 3 minutes. Up to 3 minutes. The original rebuttal time he should get back. Thank you.
May it please the court. The PTO's position is that the board should be affirmed for three independent reasons. And the first reason is that the reissue is a statutory remedy, and the particular alleged error here relates to enforceability and not operativeness or validity. Second, as the panels discussed, the conduct here really wasn't an error. It was a choice. It may have been a bad choice under the circumstance, but it's not the kind of error, again, that's correctable by reissue. And third, and I think equally importantly, is no case has ever allowed a terminal disclaimer to be removed through reissue because, as Mr. Lopez just said, once you dedicate something to the public, you can't get it back. So we believe those three, either any of those three reasons prevents a reversal of the board in this instance.
Can you focus on the second point?
Sure.
I think I'm right in understanding, but you can tell me if I'm not, that probably most errors that are corrected on reissue are the result of deliberate choices. The question is, what is the basis of the choice? Very few errors are, I typed something wrong,
right.
Or it was inadvertent. It was rather that there was some assumption underlying the deliberate choice, and the assumption is now asserted to be wrong. So how do you make that? It seems to me to say all by itself it was a choice doesn't begin to define what errors count. Can you help in defining what errors count?
Well, I think the language of 251, as Judge Hughes alluded to, points to certain kinds of errors, like an error in the specification or the drawing, or by claiming more or less than the patentee had right to claim. There was an error that came up in the ODA case that was presented to the court, where in the translation from a Japanese patent application to a U.S. translation, they translated the word nitrous instead of nitric, and as a chemical matter, that makes a great difference in whether the claims are actually going to make any sense or not. But the kinds of choices that are made here, for example, as discussed in Sorenkin, a choice to give up an earlier filing date in order to get your drawings in the door, or in Weiler.
Right, so I guess what I keep focusing on is what I was asking Mr. Lopez about. I'm not sure that there is, but suppose there was a straightforward statement in a reissued declaration. I believed at the time that these things were commonly owned. That turned out to be false. Now, why? First of all, tell me, is there such a thing? And second, if there had been, why would that not be enough?
Well, if I think I understand your question, the terminal disclaimer here actually didn't have an error in it. And I think your honors discussed that really, I hope I'm answering your question, the terminal disclaimer here simply made a promise.
I know, but I appreciate that. Suppose
right.
that the reissue declaration said,
right.
I promised here that this patent would not be enforceable except at such times as there is common ownership. I did promise that, but
right. The
only reason I promised that was that I thought that there was factual assertion about the world. I believed that factual assertion at the time. I was mistaken.
Well, putting aside the fact that it wouldn't get around the statutory language or the terminal disclaimer problem, just purely looking at that error, I think that might rise to the level of an error, but that's not what the terminal disclaimer said here. In fact...
I'm sorry, my hypothetical leaves the terminal disclaimer exactly the way it was.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let me revise my answer. There is no evidence in the record regarding what the error was. I mean, we don't know. Mr. Caruso, one of the inventors, is a sophisticated party, has numerous inventors on this X-ray, applications and patents on this X-ray technology, and he has numerous relationships with Carl Zeiss, who's the assignee of the first patent. So we could take your hypothetical at face value and accept the error, but in order for that hypothetical to apply to this case, we need some kind of proffer of evidence of what actually happened.
Okay, well, so I mean, where I started, my first question was, is there evidence of that error? And you're saying no.
Correct.
Now let's talk about the legal standards.
Yes, sir.
Suppose there were such evidence of a false belief, a belief at the time of the submission of the terminal disclaimer that there was common ownership, and then later a reissued declaration that says, I believe that, it's false. I believe that, period, new sentence, it is a false, it was a false belief as it turned out.
Right.
Why would that not be a correctable error on reissue?
Because that error doesn't relate to operability or validity. That relates to enforceability, and this is a statutory remedy, and it would not qualify under the statute. And as this court said in Weiler, not...
Why isn't a patent inoperative if it's unenforceable?
Inoperative is a term of art used in the patent law to refer to utility and usefulness.
Okay, let's assume we don't agree with you and on that.
Okay.
And I'd like to get back to, I think, what Judge Toronto was trying to ask you about, whether it's correctable or not. Let's assume unenforceability is inoperativeness. Is there still something in the statute that it could come under if he had had this mistaken belief in joint ownership?
I think...
Would he be claiming more than he had a right to if he relied on that mistake and the patent was granted on the basis of that mistake?
I'd like to address the operative point, but just to put that aside for a minute, I think he would still have a problem because, as you pointed out, even if you accepted arguendo that enforceability fell under inoperativeness, there's further limitation in the statute, as you pointed out. There are two reasons. It has to be reason of a defective specification or drawing, which is not alleged here, or it has to be reason by the patentee claiming more or less than your right to claim. And this isn't a claiming problem. This is an ownership problem. So you'd have to stretch the definition of claiming to include these ownership issues, and you'd have to stretch the meaning of operativeness to include enforceability. And at a certain point, this reissue exception is going to swallow the rule that when patents issued, you know, they set the meet and bounds of the patent. The operativeness issue...
But just, I mean, explain why it wouldn't be the case. Like, I guess I'm thinking it might be... more than I thought that I was entitled to because I included claims that I now want to never would have included.
Right.
Or maybe even more plausibly, it's less than I had a right to claim because I just gave up a bunch of years of my exclusivity right on an assumption that turned out to be false. Why is that not claiming less than I had a right to claim?
Well, I don't. It's not a claiming problem. It's an ownership problem. It doesn't go to the language used within the claims or the scope or the breadth of the claims.
Well, you're saying it doesn't have to do with the language in the claims. It has to do with the period of protection for whatever has been claimed.
Correct. It's a procedural issue, not a substantive issue. And
but,
I think
well, go ahead.
This language talking about the claims by reason of the patentee claiming more or less than a right to claim goes to the substance of the words used within the claim language. And reissue, just you know, for a historical note, is something that came up, you know, in the 1800s by the Supreme Court, was later codified in 1832 and 1836 using the same language.
Can I just remind me, is reissue available for reissuing the identical claims but with corrected specification, either to provide support or maybe even also to establish the priority chain so that the scope of the claim is unchanged?
Yes, there can be defects in the specifications that are corrected. So it could affect it.
And that would be under the second prong of the, or I forget which
one. Well, in the order, the first one.
Defective specification, right. But not under the claiming less, more or less.
Correct.
Okay.
But I think it's very important to understand a little bit historically that this idea of operativeness and validity do not relate to enforceability. It does not relate to procedural problems. There has never been a single reissue case that we are aware of where a procedural defect or an enforceability issue has ever been corrected by reissue. And just in 2013, this court had the occasion to consider whether or not terminal disclaimers could be removed on reissue in the Yamazaki case and said that it can't because, again, as Mr. Lopez said, once you dedicate this, you know, your patent to the public, whether that is the substance of a claim or the length of enforceability or the way it can be enforced, that can't be undone. Those eggs cannot be unscrambled. And as this court said in Weiler, reissue...
I understand that with regard to the term of years. That comes from 253, right? But I don't understand where that comes from within the ownership disclaimer.
Well, I think the ownership disclaimer...
I'm interrupting, but I want to just finish the thought. Because the whole point of not getting back the years is you put in the patent, I'm only going to enforce it to a certain date. And so the public has to be able to rest assured on that. But it doesn't seem to serve the same, the ownership disclosure, if you want to call it that, doesn't seem to serve the same kind of public interest. So it seems that there could be a distinction there. I'm not saying there is, but I don't see the same reason for it.
Well, I think the ownership distinction serves a very important public interest that's been recognized by this court, the predecessor to this court, and Van Ornum, and again by this court, and below, if I'm pronouncing that right, which is that it prevents two separate owners from enforcing this essentially with the same invention against an infringer. And there have been many cases by this court which have gone into great detail when this common ownership element of the terminal disclaimer has been specifically challenged as unlawful. And this court has said time and time again that this protection against potential infringers by having the same invention enforced by two different parties is a very important part of the terminal disclaimer practice. And I think it goes, 253 kind of has two portions. It has a substantive portion that goes to disclaiming parts of the claim, and then it has a timing portion. But with respect to both portions, the statute says that once you file your terminal disclaimer with the Patent Office, it's thereafter considered part of the original patent. And then even the reissue statute kind of ties back into that because it says even if you make a change, you can't change what's been dedicated to the public. And there it specifically refers to the timing element because if even in reissue, you can only reissue for the term that you still have remaining. So it seems to me that perhaps there might be a case, as Judge Toronto was hypothesizing, where some of these hurdles would be overcome, but here the facts aren't there to establish the error in the first instance, and even if there were an error, because we're dealing with procedural issues and enforceability issues and ownership issues, we can't get under the specific umbrella of the reissue statute as it's plainly defined. So for all those reasons, we believe that the board's decision should be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Lopez, you have 3 minutes.
Yes. Your Honor, those claims would not have been allowed without the incorrect terminal disclaimer. So it's definitely a case of claiming more than you were entitled to. The patentee was not entitled to claim those claims, except for this incorrect terminal disclaimer. In the brief declaration, it was clearly stated that the terminal disclaimer was incorrect at the moment it was issued.
When you say the claims wouldn't have been allowed, do you mean this particular examiner wouldn't have allowed the claims, or do you mean that they simply were not legally allowable?
Well, with the arguments used, those claims would not have been, should not have been allowed.
Should not have been allowed. Okay.
All right. That's so because there was an obvious as all patenting rejection, and the incorrect terminal disclaimer was used to obtain those claims. In Veola, this court, or the predecessor court, basically said that inoperable is ineffective to protect the invention. There's nothing more ineffective to protect the invention than an unenforceable patent. It does not protect the invention. It's like opening the door to your house and say, come in, all you faithful, and take whatever you want. There hasn't been a case in which reissue was not allowed, in which the patentee does not obtain the benefit that the statute wanted to provide him. And that was the intent of the reissue statute, was to allow the patentee to gain that benefit. That is what the statute uses to entice the patentee to disclose the inventions. And that was very clear in Grant versus Raymond, which is the Supreme Court case that basically gave us the reissue statute. And finally, there has never been a proposal to remove the disclaimer, right, to replace it with a correct terminal disclaimer, so the public gets what was given to them. We cannot take it away. Second, in the reissue application, the claims that were given because of the incorrect terminal disclaimer were canceled. So the public will never be sued by two parties for the same claim. The protection to the public was preserved in the reissue application. And there has always been both the intention is to keep the protection to the public and keep what was granted to the public. But we go back to the fact that there has not been a case where reissue has not been allowed, where the patentee ends up not getting the reward that the statute offers him. And that is the intent of the reissue section of the statute.
Thank you.
For those reasons, Your Honor, we ask to reverse the decision and send the case back, remand the case back to the Patent Office.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Thank you.